Welcome, Archetypal Tarot Podcast listeners. Today we have a guest that has been with us before for her two previous decks, and now she has a book. This is Kara Simons. Welcome, Kara.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. It's a treat to talk with you every time.
Wonderful. And the book that you are coming out with in just about 3 weeks is You Belong Here, a story of otherworldly help in finding my place. And I'm so excited. I feel like after following your both of your decks and the beautiful imagery in there and the descriptions and the stories that kind of have trickled through there, that this book really takes back a veil to explore how you came to so much of this wisdom and conversation and help through a variety of sources that have come from within in connection to nature. So just starting right here with the title, You Belong Here. What is this book about, and what do you hope for your audience in sharing this journey with you?
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you for how you wove all of that together and connected it. It is very much a lifting of the veil on the other projects that I've done. And for me, writing the book was first and foremost for myself an opportunity to explore this roughly 9-year cycle in my life that marked bridging out of this very restrictive and, to be honest, damaging belief system that I grew up in, which was a strange hybrid of Mormon theology, but not within the church structure itself. And so I parted ways with any kind of organized religion theology in 2012. And that really marked a turning point in my life. And this book really tells the story of how my connections with the other world, which is my term for the realm where imagination and spirit dance, that my connections with this other world that were mine, that weren't relying on a middleman or some sort of authority figure or anybody's permission. My journey of learning how to tap into that, and it was, there were always people that influenced me in some ways, different teachers or different books that had a nugget that really helped me on my journey. But ultimately, it was my choice and it was my practice and my personal relationships with the other side that changed me. And that helped me bridge into all of the work that I'm doing now. So I created my first deck in 2017. And then ever since then, it's been kind of a snowball of all the things that I'm doing today. And so this book really answers the question of how. When I do workshops or different events in person, I'm often asked, how do you do this? Because I'm an attorney in my day job. And on the one hand, it seems like that there's some inconsistency in a way with, like, we associate being an attorney with being a left-brained or evidence-based, very physical reality kind of job. And all of this other stuff that I do is very much not that. And I feel like this book is my very long answer to the question of how I'm doing both. And it explores three main, I would say, building blocks of our human experience. So our identity and our security and our purpose. And the title really speaks to my experience over many different cycles in my life of being either abandoned or separated from something that I thought was a source of security, and having to find belonging within myself through my own relationships and my own connections to what I call the cosmic spider web. That really helped me feel a sense of belonging that is mine, that is innate. And I believe that's something that everybody has. And I had to decondition a lot of beliefs in order to believe that I have that belonging. And once I got to that, the heart of that, it really opened up this whole world for me. And I started following nudges one at a time. And ultimately, that led to me finding what I believe is my purpose, which is to create spiritual tools and containers and find meaningful ways to connect with people so that they can find their own source of belonging or faith or belief that resonates with them. It's really important to me that everything I do is free of any rules or limitations or requirements that someone follow a path that I did. I think there's many different paths that bring us fulfillment and that bring us a sense of being in communion with something greater than us. And my path is just one of many, but I wanted to write it down and So I did.
Yay, I'm so glad you did. And it's a really beautiful book. And I engage with it so personally in so many different ways, which will, I hope they kind of weave into this, our
Yes.
conversations together. So yeah, and I've written this quote out just at the top of my notes here, that the most reliable answer to every single question is to go within. And this book is really your journey with trusting that, the images that helped you to come to conclusions through the various trials and tribulations of life that I think a lot of people can relate to. And so, and to have created the cards that I think help us to do that with ourselves, trust within, to ask, just ask these questions. So there's actually a very powerful, you talk a lot about your children and how, before they were born, the really challenging pregnancies that you had, and then, concerns that come with being a mother and wondering about their health and this and that and the other thing, and what allows you to trust in various moments. But I think one of the stories was really interesting with one of your daughters, and you have three, right?
Yep, three daughters.
And she was, there was two separate occasions that was where she had various kind of complications, maybe with bug bites or
Oh,
illnesses.
sure.
And the one scenario, the big question was like, do I take her in for all these antibiotics and mess up her gut health, and or is this something that is going to resolve? And you really engage in this process of asking her the spirit of her body, and she comes to you, I think, in the first scenario you mentioned, and I think she says that she'll be okay, and you trust that, and she is. And then there's another scenario where you do the same process, and then she says, "Mommy, I need help." And that's when you really hear that and follow that the need for the Western medicine that comes right in. So I was reading this, and I happened to be, and then shortly after that, I came into a situation with my cat, where my cat was not himself. He was really lethargic. Like, if I picked him up, it felt like just barely any energy. I knew that taking him to the vet would be a huge traumatic thing for him, and probably expense, all of those things that come with taking your cat to the vet. I did schedule an emergency appointment for the Monday after Easter, just in case, if he's still like this, I'm definitely taking him in. But I did tap into his, kind of his little spirit energy, just sinking in and speaking to that part of him. And he said, "If you could just change this, there's a water fountain that sometimes he likes to drink out of. If you could just change that water so it's really, really fresh, and just let me sleep and rest, I think I'm going to be okay." So I did all of these things, and then I was really, he didn't seem to change much through the morning of Easter. He was just sleeping, 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 barely eating. But then he turned a corner on Easter, where he just started to like eat a little bit, and then he drank a bunch of water, and then he turned a corner.
Oh, I love that.
And by the Monday of, that I had to go back to work, and it would have been the morning of the appointment that we weren't sure if he needed, we were able to cancel it because he was asking to go outside, and he seemed completely himself again. So it was such a huge process of trust, like, can I tap into the actual cat?
Yeah, you can, and you did.
And it happened, and I don't think I would have had that prompting or trust as much had I not read your book. So that the fact that you were able to do that with your own child and make the right decisions for her felt like, I think I could try this with a cat.
And that is so awesome. I love that story. That means a lot to me that it that it opened that for you, because that's a big part of what my hope is with this book, is that even though the majority of the book is my personal stories, they touch on very universal themes. And I think that as a collective, there's a lot that we are untangling right now and unprogramming. And my hope is that by being really vulnerable and honest about, you know, those daily kind of moments where you have to make those choices, that it could give someone a little bit more confidence to just try it out. Because I think that oftentimes, most of the situations we're dealing with, we have room. We can, oh, I'm going to try this path. I'm going to see. And that sometimes just making that choice to see how it goes, it's not the only choice. Like, you just keep making different choices. And in both of those scenarios that you described with my daughter, it wasn't a one and done. It's a paying attention and staying in communication. And okay, I'm checking in, I'm getting this answer. Okay, tomorrow morning, is the answer still the same? And that by being diligent and continuing to do those check-ins, we really can get guidance. And that if something changes, we can know. And I think that that's such a powerful thing to remember, that we can just do that as part of our daily life. And it's something we all have access to. It's our birthright. It's a huge source of support as we're navigating all of the difficult parts of being here.
Yeah, absolutely. And I thank you so much for that. And there's so many moments like that in the book that are absolutely relatable. I think people have been there in a lot of the types of situations you describe, where it's a vacation rental that feels a little funky to, why are all these ants are in my house to, what is the best path to take with my child who's going to, entering school and has a teacher? Can I trust what she's going through when she's now in this new situation? So all these things, they're entirely, in a sense, normal, but there are opportunities for us to see that expansiveness, to see that trust, to try these things on that we're born with, as you say.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's talk a little bit about these guides that you encounter in the book. So I think readers who have been following your other decks, the Prairie Majesty Oracle and the Song of the Grandmothers, they'll be really happy to find that a lot of the imagery from these decks are in the book. So and put very specific imagery and journey and conversation happens with some of these animals and spirits. So I think maybe if it's okay, I'll just share some of the ones that I notice are in there, that the owl, ants, as we talked about.
Yes, I love ants so much.
My gosh. And the deer and the shark and grandmother spiraling, and of course, raven, which is a huge one for you, I know. And also grandmother spider, so big. The panther. Are any of these ones you would like to talk about or highlight for our listeners to be welcomed into this book? Any ones that are kind of calling out to you maybe now that you might want to mention?
Sure. Well, gosh, it's like having a room full of friends and like, who do you want to talk about first? Because you love all of them so much. Well, and I think that was something that was really fun for me about writing the book, was that when I wrote the decks, I had these relationships. I mean, the time period of the book precedes any of these decks, any of these relationships with the beings in the deck as they are set out in the third books. And I think being able to get so intensely personal about them was really fun and liberating, because when I was writing the guidebooks and working with them for the decks, I really wanted to honor like the full spectrum of each of their energies and their wisdom and their intelligence. And I wanted for each card to be a container that was like an access point. Like, okay, on any given moment, if you're going to pull an ant card, there's a range of what that ant might be wanting to help you with. And in my book, I'm able to say, oh, okay, well, here's examples specifically in my life where Ant helped me with this type of energy, and kind of hit a lot of the different points in that spectrum and get really personal with it. And ants are, I just love ants. I think they're amazing. I don't love when they're in my house. I'm not as evolved as I would like to be with that. But aunts have been a tremendous teacher for me, and I feel like my relationship with aunt really illustrates the crossover between our physical world and the spiritual realm, and that sometimes the animals that come or the creatures that want to get our attention in our everyday reality, they hold a certain kind of archetypal energy, and that we can connect with that and become aware of it, or there's an invitation when that creature is showing up in our physical life. But that relationship can bloom and expand and include them coming through in a dream or through a meditation or just hearing them in your mind. Everybody has different ways of connecting. And I feel like Aunt really taught me to pay attention more to my physical reality. And there's a lot of, I mean, there's different stories with them coming into my house, and they won't leave until I learn their lesson. And that's something that I didn't understand at first. And so I would get really angry when I would see them in my kitchen. At first, I would like take them outside on a tissue or something. And then I started to just, I was telling them telepathically, like, you're not allowed in the house. Like, you're in the food, you're in my kitchen. Like, this isn't okay. And they wouldn't leave. And finally I realized, I don't think they're leaving because I'm not paying attention. I'm not putting my antenna out to see what they're trying to tell me. And that story ultimately concludes with me getting pregnant with my youngest daughter, which is a project that I shouldn't call it a project, but it was a longing that I had. I had felt her presence for a long time, and I was very aware that I had made a plan with her to bring her into this world, and that now that I was in my human body and I knew that pregnancy was very, very difficult and traumatizing for me, it was very scary to have the courage to open that door with her. And so the book shows a lot of different stories about my healing journey and how I went through a lot of process in order to get to the point where I had the courage to get pregnant again with her. And when the first time that the ants really infiltrated my kitchen, I didn't understand why. And finally, when I put my antenna out, I was like, oh, I think they're trying to tell me that it's like the time is right for this. And I got confirmation from an anteater that I saw when I was meditating. And I felt like my little spirit baby was telling me the same thing. We happened to be gone that weekend. And I knew that when I got home, the ants would be gone because I listened to their message, and they were gone. And I knew I'd gotten pregnant, and soon I got a positive test. And I feel like that whole experience, the culmination of this very long process that I describe in the book of building that trust, it was all these little baby steps. And it felt like that all coming together was like a catalyst for me to really trust that, okay, I'm not making this up. I'm not inventing something just for my own amusement or comfort. This really is something larger that I'm tapping into, and it's real, and I can trust it, and it can be a source of guidance to make very big life decisions. So I love ants, and they come back in the book. They come back several times, and they're sneaky, and they're curious, and they always have something to say, and I love that about them.
Now, I notice you don't have a cockroach card, and
You're
I
right. I don't have experiences with cockroaches, but
so around this time when I was reading the ants thing, like for the maybe the second time I saw a cockroach in my house, and I was just, you can imagine how I felt about it. And I thought, you know what? I think I'm gonna definitely, I'm gonna buy some traps, and I gotta get rid of these cockroaches. But I decided, you know what? I'm gonna warn them. I think you have something in your hands where you're like, this is the boundary. So I said, go in, I'm gonna meditate on this, I'm gonna reach out to the cockroaches, I'm gonna say, I know you want a piece of this goodness. This house, everyone loves this house. Humans and animals and insects alike. And I know you just want home and space and food and all the good things that life has to offer. But this is the space for humans, and this is, I have to create a boundary. We cannot have cockroaches in the house, but I don't want to kill you. But there will be traps, but you'll know that these are traps, I'm just sending you that message, and you can choose to walk into them, or you can choose to hear this boundary now and find a different place to be. Anywhere outside of the house is fine with me. And you know what? I got those traps. I put them in the house, and I have not caught a single cockroach. And
Whoa.
I have not seen a single cockroach. I'm thinking there's something to this. I'm thinking
I
there's.
think so too. I think so too. And I think it's a really beautiful way to remind ourselves and to make choices from a place of like, we're all connected. And, you know, these creatures, these insects that are here on the properties where we're living, they also need a right to be there. They need somewhere to live. And I really respect the way that you explained that to them and that it's a boundary. And yeah, I think that's a beautiful approach.
Yeah, and so speaking of boundaries, your work, and I know you got a lot of, you're taking a break right now from all your deadlines. You are a lawyer. And what I love about this book is that you actually have found the being a lawyer really works with the left brain, right? It's all about what's provable,
Physical evidence, yep.
physical evidence, all of
Being
that stuff.
objective.
Objectivity, and yet you're able to use some of these skills of the lawyer and actually bring them into the spiritual realm. Can you tell our audience a little bit about how you do that, how you did that?
Sure. Well, one of my favorite words is containers. I probably already used it talking about the decks. And I feel like something that being a lawyer and studying the law, like going to law school, practicing, I've been practicing since 2008. And the skill set I've developed has really honed my ability to be precise and to be very clear in communication and in setting up containers for information. So something that I do a lot of is contract drafting. And in contract drafting, it's a common practice that you would define specialized terms and give them a capital, and that anytime you use that term later on, it's capturing the full definition that you set out at the beginning. And I use that in my practice for, there's a chapter on protection and discernment, which I feel like is a very important chapter. It's one of the pivotal chapters in the book because even though I strongly believe that everybody has, the hard wiring to be able to connect with the other side and to communicate. I believe we're all still innately connected to this larger cosmic spider web. And it's really important to me that in talking about that and encouraging people to explore it and experiment with it, that I'm also being mindful about protecting yourself and having those kind of clear boundaries, just like you did with the cockroach. And so I share in that chapter, like a script that I sort of developed for myself years ago. And in that script, I'm defining terms. I'm saying, okay, here's my sanctuary. Here's everything that's included in this sanctuary. And then I'm saying, here's what is allowed to go into that sanctuary. And here's what's not allowed to go into that sanctuary. And then I have a step where I say, all right, if there's anything in my sanctuary that's not in alignment with these terms that I've defined, then I'm using my ability as an aspect of source, which I believe we're all, you know, one facet of this larger diamond of God, source, universe, intelligence, however you want to think of it. But we all have that inside of us, and that gives each of us power and authority to be sovereign over ourselves and to make choices for ourselves. And so I also believe that that power that we each have is something that we can use to clear our energy field, to clear the spaces that we occupy and say, wait a minute, no, this is my boundary. This is my room. And I'm going to keep it clean, and I'm not going to let things come in that are going to try to be creating a fog or illusion or making me scared. And of course, I'll get back to that in a moment because I feel like there's an important distinction to make there. But with this practice of protecting myself, once I've said, all right, here's my sanctuary, here's what's allowed in or not, I am intentionally clearing that. And I share a number of different visuals that people can try. For me, a visual that works really well is to imagine that there's a sun inside of my chest, and that when I'm clearing my sanctuary, I am just beaming my own light, which is God-given. It's a part of me, it's my birthright. I'm beaming that into this bubble all around me, and it's burning away anything that's not in alignment with love and unconditional forgiveness. Those are the two types of energy that I allow into my sanctuary. And then, So I go through all these steps, and I feel like part of what I'm able to bring to a conversation about this is that precision and is that clarity, that it's not this amorphous blob of like, well, just make sure you're protecting yourself. Like for a lot of people, myself included, at different points in my life, that would have felt very vague and confusing. And, how do I go about that? Or what does that even mean? And I feel like something that was really important to me in writing the book was to be as precise and clear as possible in order to empower the reader to say, I'm not trying to just throw out some sort of platitude or some kind of superficial concept that I'm just talking about at such a high level that if you don't understand it, there must be something wrong with you. Like that's never a kind of teaching style that I engage in. I always want to be relatable and real and precise. And if I could go back just really briefly, because this is important to me, but this, what I mentioned before about, having something inside of your sanctuary that's like, if you're afraid or if you're feeling confused, another really important part of that chapter, which I spent probably the most time on in writing the book, and I rewrote it a number of times, and I spent a lot of time going through like sentence by sentence and like checking in with my spiritual team, like, I don't want to confuse anybody. And so I really was very diligent in writing that chapter. But I think there's an important distinction to make between the kinds of feelings that we all are going to experience in life. There's a full spectrum of emotions, and that spectrum of emotions that we experience does include grief and pain and fear and confusion and fog and doubt and discomfort. All of that is part of the human experience. And I'm never going to try to say someone should try to avoid that or should try to bypass it, or just if you're experiencing one of those emotions that you must be out of alignment or you're doing something wrong, yada, yada, yada. So for me, the important distinction is what is the source of that feeling? And for me, having this very clear sanctuary helps me to say, all right, there's a lot of stuff going on out in the world. There are people out there who are promoting ideas or agendas that to me don't feel in alignment with love. And I have a long list of like, how do I define love? What does that mean? Like, it is a very real, revolutionary, inclusive, and dynamic force. It's wild. It's going to ask us to do things that are difficult and outside our comfort zones. It's not a platitude. So I feel like for me, something that I had to really learn for myself was how to discern when I'm engaging with something outside of myself, what is the source of that energy? Is the ultimate source of that energy a source of love, or is it a source of hate or greed or trying to take power or comfort at the expense of someone else? Like really getting clear, what am I plugging into when I'm engaging with something outside of myself? And that on that level, on that side of the equation, I think it is really good to be mindful about, hey, I'm plugging into this person or this thing that is giving me like a really bad feeling. It's like I've plugged my extension cord into a socket that's routing an energy that doesn't feel good and doesn't make me want to be kind to myself and other people. Even though that one's a loaded thing too. I feel like I had to write a chapter about this because it's so important. I don't want to get this one wrong. So I really had to spend a lot of time being clear in the chapter. But I draw this distinction between this stuff that's outside of my sanctuary that I'm like discerning. Do I want to participate in that? Is that causing harm to myself or someone else if I participate in that? Versus when I'm within my own bubble, I have parts of me that are wounded, parts of me that are scared, parts of me that have felt abandoned or unloved or cut off. And it is my job as a sovereign person to hold all of that. And sometimes holding all of that means saying, yeah, right now I'm really terrified, or right now I feel like I have no idea what to do. I feel like I'm all alone. And part of the way that we hold all of that is not being afraid to say, that's how I'm feeling right now. And that's a real emotion that's inside of me. And over time and with practice, I've learned how to exist in my multidimensionality, if that makes sense, that I'm existing not only as the part of me that, is a 7-year-old getting separated from everything familiar who felt very confused and lost and abandoned. And I can hold space for that part of me while the other parts of me that exist outside of my body or that have had just the depth of experience now that I'm an adult, that those parts of me, it's like they're holding that younger me. You know what I'm saying? That I can hold all of that. And I feel like over time, I've started to notice that the balance is shifting. And that now, because of all the intentional work I'm doing, there, when I'm in a really difficult moment, the part of me that knows all these things I talk about in my book feels bigger now than the part of me that is still like, I don't know, it's too hard, it's too scary, I don't know what to do. And that's been a really powerful thing for me to realize the progress and to see a real shift and a change in my being. I'm kind of going off on lots of tangents, Sandera, but hopefully that answers your question a little bit.
No, it absolutely does. And I just want to let our listeners know that the language and the just the detailed, clear way you've described all of this is in the second part of your book, the belong part, are you safe? And the claiming your energetic sanctuary and that your work through keywords, authority, boundaries, transmute, remove, and readers are invited to, they can use this
Right.
and adapt it to their own needs. They can change things, but it's like you had a spiritual lawyer that would come in and like drop a contract for you.
Yeah,
I
it
think
is
that's
actually.
really useful and rare. It is kind of amorphous in a lot of ways. So usually, so this kind of really gives clarity and terms that people can use. So it's really, really hands-on in that way. And so also in the part two part, we're introduced to Bartholomew. And I have to admit, so like, okay, a couple months ago I did a retreat where I met a woman who she says every psychic I've ever been to has told me that I'm a Pleiadian, or I'm from the, or I'm related to the Pleiadians, something like that. And this was totally new, like a new thing for me. I was like, what? Like, what is this? And I read your book after I got to know this wonderful woman at the retreat who did an Akashic record reading for me that was mind-blowing and amazing. Totally opened up my mind to all of this, to these star beings and so forth. I have to admit, like, had I read this book maybe before I had that experience, I would have been like, what is this?
Yeah, that's fair.
And I know that you work through in the book your own, layers of doubt and, trust that you work through in this guide coming to you. So can you talk a little bit about Bartholomew, if that's okay, and how he appears in the book and your process and anything someone who may be new to this might like to know.
Sure. Well, it's a great question. And I have to admit that as I was writing the book, this is something that I felt the most trepidation about sharing. As you mentioned at the start, it's an unveiling in this book. I'm very much putting it all out there. And Bartholomew is a Pleiadian star being that I started connecting with, I think it was in 2018. And so that predated the two decks that I have out now. I mean, I connected with him before I ever was working on those, really. And it did stretch my capacity to believe in our ability to communicate with beings on the other side. And from the place that I'm in now, I can look back and appreciate that starting from a place of belief that we're not alone in the universe, that there are many different types of beings that exist, and that our human experience is like one choice among the smorgasbord of things that spirits can go and experience and do. And that for me, working with animals was this really beautiful gateway. And I talk about that in the book and how it opened. And I think that that laid this foundation of trust for me that made me more open-minded as this new type of being started to come through. And so in the book, I talk about different ways that I built kind of a shorthand language or had various confirmations and validations that really helped me believe that I was not making it up. And so that there's lots of stories of things that would happen in my dreams or meditations that would be then confirmed in the physical. And I feel like that's part of why introducing Bartholomew isn't something that happens until I think it's chapter six. And that I wanted to build a relationship of trust with the reader as well, because I'm very aware because of my own belief bubble that I grew up in, that there can be a lot of discomfort or fear around this idea of opening yourself up to this communication with something more, or that it does stretch credulity, that it asks someone to step outside of a comfort zone of what they've experienced or what they've been taught is possible. And so I feel like partly an answer to your question for my communication with him to start, I had to go through all these other experiences that made it possible for me to even entertain. Like, is this, am I talking to somebody? Like, I had to go through that. And I think I would encourage readers or anyone listening to honor the pace at which you build trust with the other side. There's no rush, there's no competition, there's no race, there's no one way to do it. And the biggest piece of advice I would give someone is to really learn what it means to trust yourself. Because when you start to trust yourself and you start to know who you are and what that means, that's the whole first part of the book, is answering the question of who are you really? It's this identity exploration. And there's exercises someone can do to help get some clarity for themselves. But, to really start to understand who you are and what it feels like to be who you are, you start to develop discernment about what feels like not you, and what feels like it's harmonizing with you, or what feels like it's compatible with you. And so I'd been doing all of that for a while. And I have a good friend who has this amazing room in her house. It's called the Stone Room. And I describe it in the book, but it's like a portal. It's a magical place it's a sanctuary or a temple, or it's a place that you can go and sit in. And my friend has this amazing relationship with stones, and she's very intuitive and very connected to their energies. And this room is a container, and you can go in and you can sit and you can meditate, and it feels easier when you're in this room to connect with the other side or with the divine. And so I was routinely going in the room and meditating and enjoying the benefit of that clarity when I'm in it. And there was a stone on a windowsill that was asking for my attention. And so I just started noticing it and paying attention. And when I let my gaze go soft, I saw different animal shapes that were coming out of this stone, and it started to kind of morph and it felt alive. And I don't remember, I don't think it was on the same day, but another session when I went in, I just felt this presence. And I had built up the ability to feel that from working with Raven and working with all these other guides that I mentioned in the book. And those had kind of sharpened my sensitivity, even feel that something was there wanting to communicate with me. So I felt a presence, and I heard the name Bartholomew, and I was like, that's unexpected. Like, that's, I feel like one of the keys for me is when something comes through that has no discernible link to anything going on in my life, that I'm like, I don't think I'm making that up, because that name wasn't on my radar. It wasn't something I ever really thought about. So I had a conversation with my friend, and she's the one who introduced me to this idea of star beings, and that she intuited that he felt Pleiadian. And I was like, yeah, that feels right to me. And it's not something that I've really gone and studied. There are a lot of people that claim to channel or work with different star beings, and I don't have really any parameters on that, because I haven't gone and read it. It's not, I'm a big believer in, for myself, I want to experience things for myself. I'm gathering my own evidence. That's the attorney part of me coming out again. But and so I was decided to challenge myself to, okay, can I learn this on my own? Can I communicate with him? And so it started with me. Usually it would be easier to feel him when I was in the stone room in that physical presence. And I would start to feel just different theme words, just different ideas or concepts that would just sort of, best way I can describe it is it just felt like they were knocking at the door in my brain. And I'm a very much a words person. And so I would just hear, these different words, and I would kind of sit with it or kind of chew on it. And then I would start asking Bartholomew, like, okay, well, let's have a conversation about this word. Let's have a conversation about love or humility or integration or whatever word I would feel coming through. And I also have a journalism background, so I'm very comfortable with like note taking and recording conversation. And so I used all those skills, and I would just journal, and I would just pre-write a question, and then I would just kind of write whatever came to me without trying to edit it as it came out. I would just write it down. And then over the course of, I don't know, it's probably a year or two, I can't remember exactly, but I had amassed, maybe 30 some different themes and all these different notes. And I was learning a lot. I felt like, wow, Bartholomew has this really different way of speaking and coming at a concept that's something that we've all thought about a lot, like love or forgiveness, and explaining it with just a little bit of nuance or using language that helped me see it fresh. And I thought, okay, I think we're going to make an oracle deck together. Like, I think that's the end goal here. And then I got to the point where it was like, I just got this sense from him of like, you aren't ready to do the back half of this project. Like, you need more life experience. You need to go through some things. I want to say that was probably in 2019. And so I shelved it. I put all my notes away and I was like, all right, we'll just kind of see what happens. And at some point in there, my friend felt like she was directed to give me the stone that had been on the windowsill. And so I have that stone at my house, and it's not like he lives in the stone. To me, it feels more like it's just a microphone. It makes it easier to hear him. And so I shelved all of that. And then at the end of 2019 was when I first had that flash of inspiration for Prairie Majesty Oracle. And then that project took up a lot of time, and then revisiting my grandmother's deck to be Song of the Grandmothers. All of that just took a lot of time. And it also opened up new skill sets within me, because the way that I approached both of those decks was very much influenced by these training wheels that I had kind of had a benefit of with Bartholomew, of like, let's just try this, let's just experiment with it. And when I started communicating with the beings in the prairie deck, it was very much like I had developed a little bit more of like a muscle to do that work, and just honing that through working with all of these beings. Like, for my decks, I don't research what other people think those different guides mean on a spiritual level. It's all very much directed by what I feel them telling me. And I do research their physical characteristics and I learn about them scientifically, but I think doing both of those decks, and then just those were intense years. I mean, I'm not alone to that. Like, Prairie came out in 2020. There's been a lot that's been happening in the world in the last 4 years, and it's still happening. And all of that, I would say, just deepened my awareness and my scope. And it was August of 2021 when I finally sat down to start writing this book. But earlier in that year, I want to say it was like the beginning of 2021, I had felt like, okay, it's been about 2 years since I've really tried to communicate with Bartholomew. I feel like it's time for me to reopen communication again. And I describe that in the book and like what that feels like. I feel like for me, as a person who's been fascinated by psychic communication for so long, I love reading about it. And I rarely read accounts where people say like, this is what it feels like in my body. This is what I'm thinking. This is what I'm feeling in my body. This is how I'm getting a message to come through. This is my initial reaction. This is what I choose. I haven't found a lot of accounts that really break that down. And I find that to be really instructive and fascinating, because it normalizes that there's parts of that process where you're like, wait a minute, did I get that right? Is that real? I feel like that's a very normal part of it. Or just for me, I have to sit inside of that for a while before something starts to come through. And so I had felt Bartholomew wanting to come through again. And I had this sense that it might be a book project. And I felt like I had been through enough that I was ready to kind of, enough had been gestating inside of me, but I was still kind of nervous about it, to be honest with you. And it's scary. I mean, I've done enough now to know that when I sign up to do a creative project with the other side, like when I make that contract, that it's going to ask a lot of me, but I'm not going to be allowed to bridge it into this physical world until I integrate it within myself, until I complete the homework.
Right.
And that is a lot of work, and it's uncomfortable, and it's shown a spotlight inside of me on all these things that I would rather have not known at some point, you know, like different things in myself that needed to change or that needed to be released or forgiven or transformed. And so I think because of that experience, I couldn't be like, oh, la-di-da, it's just going to be like some super sweet, easy project. Mm-hmm. So it took me a while to really get to a point where I felt brave enough to get back into it. And I share in the book, connecting with a friend who gave me some really great insights, and how that sparked me to just, okay, got to start. I got to do it. So that was August 1st of 2021. And I feel like working on the book again, or working on the book to start, that really opened the relationship with Bartholomew again, to bring this full circle back to your original question. But that was something where, you know, when I felt this instinct of like, you need to write a book, I never once had a plan. I didn't have an outline. I didn't have a structure. I didn't have like a goal. It was very much me feeling like this is something I need to do. And I would sit down, I would pull my cards and light my candle and meditate. And I would just ask, like, okay, what are we working on today? And I would sometimes feel a memory that would come up that needed to be revisited. Or I would have a conversation with Bartholomew that would spark something or with a different guide. And I feel like the relationship I have with Bartholomew was very much a backbone for this book because the way that it expanded me and my belief that this is possible. I mean, I had to take that leap of faith. Like, there's no independent corroboration that I can receive from anyone that says, "Yep, you are in fact talking with a Pleiadian star being." And I have verified that in a court of law, and it's legit. And here's a rubber stamp of approval. Like, that's never going to happen. And I'm someone who's very much been trained to seek that kind of validation, and I will never get it. And for me to go through the process of saying, I believe I'm doing this, and here's what I'm getting, and let me tell you about it. Knowing that there are people who might read that and go, Kara, that's just a bridge too far for me. And that's okay. I even say that in the book. Like, I encourage everyone to trust themselves. And if that means you're not ready to engage with that, or you don't believe it's possible, no judgment from me, no shame. Like, but I have to be honest about where I'm at, you know? And that's the part of all of this. It's very much feels like I'm naked in Times Square. But it's, anyway, that's a long answer to your question.
And no, and I just want to celebrate and thank you for your bravery in writing it, because it had a profound impact on me, because I was reading it at a time when I was trying on, deepening my own card readings and looking into channeling, and so it helped me to connect with my own guide,
Yay. That's like the ultimate goal of me writing this book is for that to happen.
You may not get the lawyer validation in the court of law, but I want to say that by through reading this, it was a big part of trusting and making connection with my own consistent guide, and allowing that to flow. How amazing, right? That's
Awesome.
accessible to, I'm kind of living proof that it's accessible to any of us that feel ready for that.
Yeah.
And it was funny when I was reading your book and asking all these questions for myself, and I love audiobooks, so I was hearing this other audiobook, Stephen King's book. Huge fan. But anyway, it's like this book that I happen to be listening to is all about, like, I don't know, figures that can't be seen by the regular people. And the character Bartholomew arrives in the book, in the audiobook, and it's not like a main character in the book. It's not even like a real character. They're just like t talking about this character, because it's showed up in this other ways, and it just keeps coming up, Bartholomew, Bartholomew. I'm like, this is not a name I hear very often. I've heard it maybe somewhere before, but there it was, right when I'm reading your book. It was kind of like, I don't know, I felt like it was tapping me too.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I've never read any Stephen King, so
There you
yeah, I
go.
had no idea.
It was really quite, and then it's like the only book of his where he's talking about auras and stuff like that. I was like, this is very interesting. But anyway, it felt like a really wonderful synchronicity, and I felt very connected in with this book, and it just awakened a lot of trust and a lot of sense of belonging in myself to explore. And I know that when readers read this and connect themselves, that they're going to find their own treasures in it. So it's coming out soon, and I know you have a Kickstarter campaign. How can our readers, tap into this project and get their own copy?
Yeah, well, I'm doing a Kickstarter that starts May 7th. It'll run for 3 weeks, and all the information is at my website. It's joyfulresonance.com, and I'm pretty excited about it. It's also scary because with my Oracle decks, I was working with amazing illustrator partners in lockstep in terms of, birthing the project. Like, they were really bringing the vision to life, and it's a little bit scary that it's now just me, like, here's my book, here's my stories. Please come support it. But it's also been really exciting to realize that I'm at a point where that's what I need to be doing, and I need to own who I am and what I wrote and why. And I also do want to give a shout out. I did get to work with an amazing illustrator this time as well, Kat Riles, who illustrated the Wings and Roots deck. And she also has a new deck that's just come out called Phases and Forests, but she did my cover. And that was a dream. I've always loved her art. And during the time of writing it, I kept seeing her art style on the cover. And so it's been really fun that I got to work with her. So I'll have my Kickstarter, and I'm hoping to sell 1,000 copies, which is a lofty goal. But if anyone's hearing this and you want to help me out, I would be so grateful. Being able to sell 1,000 copies means it brings the production cost down quite a bit, and I don't have access to the same deep discounts of a traditional publisher. So that makes it more feasible for me to keep doing this work. And I'm also hoping to do an audiobook as a stretch goal. I love doing guided meditations, and I often get feedback from people that they would love to listen to me read the book. So I'm hoping I can make that happen.
Absolutely. Well, you have a wonderful voice and a wonderful
Thank you.
message. And I love audiobooks, so let's make it happen.
Yeah.
Great. Well, thank you so much for coming onto the Archetypal Tarot podcast, Kara, and please stay in touch with your future projects.
I will. Thanks for having me, Sintera. Thanks, everyone, for listening.